Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
Oh yeah, but we're bringing our own boats, we're bringing our own river gear, all the stoves and all the units and all that. It's mostly food and beer. But it is shocking the amount of like cases of beer piled up at Lee's Ferry. Yeah. People bring the most hilarious things on the trip. We bring like bags of costumes and, you know, just totally unnecessary things.
That was Kelly New with a glimpse into a few of the luxury items on a Grand Canyon River Doy trip, plus how you can build a drift boat without any tools today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thank you for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. If you get a chance, check out our Ask a Pro segment where you can ask a question, get feedback on an upcoming episode. Just head over to wetflyswing.com/askapro to submit your question right now. I'll read these questions on upcoming episodes and give you a shout out if you'd like. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsors. Angler's Coffee roasts a full range of coffees with one goal in mind, delivering excellent coffee to every single angler. And I'm one of those anglers who's been loving Angler's Coffee. Great tasting, robust, and good to go. That's anglerscoffee.com. In today's world of mass-produced products, Stonefly Nets has reclaimed the tradition of handcrafted care with their custom wood landing nets. Please head over to wetflyswing.com/stonefly to get your custom net today. That's wetflyswing.com/stonefly to get started right now. Kelly New is here to share her story of guiding on the Colorado River and her fascination with river dories. Kelly describes how to put together your own river trip and what the first few days of a Grand Canyon dory trip looks like. Plus, Kelly has a 2.5-minute YouTube video that covers building a full drift boat online. This story and the people of the Grand Canyon. So, here is Kelly New. How's it going, Kelly?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to dig into some more on the Grand Canyon and dories. We've had a few episodes that we've talked in the past. Pete McBride. Oh, we've done a number of drift boat episodes. We had a whole season, so this is kind of continuing our drift boat season. I wanted to talk. You've got a couple things. You build dories. You've been on the Grand Canyon, and I think you had some sort of a fast, like a record of dory building. Maybe we can talk about that, but take us back first. How did you get into dories and the Grand Canyon?
Well, I got started just as a river client. I went on a trip as a passenger, paying passenger, and just for vacation, and ended up, kind of long story short, coming back to row some trips as a baggage boatman, and then eventually ended up in dories, mostly in Idaho. And then, you know, once you kind of train a bit in Idaho, then you end up usually in the Grand Canyon if you can, if the opportunity happens. So, it wasn't planned. That's for sure. I was sort of doing my career but just loved the river and loved all the people of the river, especially, and just ended up doing it. So yeah, it's a pretty cool group of people. I mean, the dories are neat boats, but just, you know, the river people, as you know, in general are pretty special.
Yeah, it is definitely. It's a unique segment after doing some of the podcasts we've had here. I just keep coming back to it. I always joke about it, but those videos, and some of them, you have some of these videos on going through lava and all the big rapids in a drift boat, essentially. So we're going to talk about some of those stories. I want to dig into that. I'm curious on Start us with this boat build, right? You had some, this is where I first heard about you. I was doing an episode and somebody mentioned you and the fact that you built this dory in like a few like days or hours. What was that story about?
Oh man, I don't even know. Okay. I did this CNC dory kit, you know, so all the parts are already cut out. So yeah, in theory, I mean, it takes, you know, a few days to put the thing together, but I don't know.
It might have been just the YouTube.
Yeah, maybe.
You got a couple fast.
Yeah, the video makes it look really fast.
Yeah. Well, and it is cool when you look at that video because you've got one of them has, you've got like the bottom and then you strap on the sides with plastic zip ties and then everything's zip tied. Describe that. What is that? Because I thought building a wooden boat was really hard, but you make it look kind of easy.
Yeah, I mean, that was the idea, is to make building at least a dory really easy. And so you don't need any tools, because I want people to be able to build these boats basically, because I want to build them for people, but it's so expensive with labor and all that kind of stuff. So the idea was if someone had at least a space to build a boat, you could build it really fast. So it's all parts are pre-cut, and then you just get a giant pack of zip ties and you basically cinch that thing together, tie it together with the zip ties. And then you kind of go back and tack all those seams in place with a epoxy adhesive, and then you fiberglass the thing
it.
Ready to go. Yes, it's fiberglassed.
So basically, once you put the fiberglass, now you've got a fully fiberglass 100% on the outside of the boat. The inside's all wood. So that's it. There's literally no, are you screwing it together too?
No screws. It's just held together with glue.
Wow.
And then once that's all cured, then you cut out the zip ties.
Gotcha.
And, but like the, it's kind of a boat building term that doesn't necessarily make sense, but it's called stitch and glue.
Yeah, stitch and glue.
And so you basically, stitch together, glue it, take out the stitches, and you got a boat.
That's cool. Yeah, we had Jason K. June on, was on a while back. He's got those beautiful like Montana wooden boats, which essentially I think are just the stitch and glue, right? Or some form of that.
I think so. I think that's how he builds them. Yeah, those boats are gorgeous.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Oh, they're so cool. Yeah. I mean, everything on those boats is just so detailed and well cared for, well thought out. Oh, yeah. I love those boats.
Well, and your thing, I mean, that's what's cool about yours. So you've got this thing, you've got going these packages, and it sounds like you're just making it easy for the normal person to get into it. I mean, how easy is it? So you have these kits coming out. I think maybe they'll be out when this podcast goes live. But talk about that kit and how that works.
Yeah, so you just buy all the plywood boat parts, basically, and the epoxy and all that kind of stuff. And so you need a space to build it in. But then all you need for tools really are pliers and scissors and maybe a rasp or something like that. You glue all the parts together, and then you have your hull, and then you have all of the decking and all the hatches and all that kind of stuff. And then you would be responsible for getting a gunwale on the boat.
Yeah,
I could help with that too. But essentially, it's just to try to make it a little bit cheaper, faster, easier for people to build boats. If you don't have, my dad was a woodworker, so I had all the tools, and which was great. But it's like, man, if the average river guide, or person just living in the city, they don't have a whole workshop full of tools to put one of these things together. But other people, I think, I think Brad Dimmick does classes, and they build boats kind of more the traditional way, which is really neat. And I think Andy Hutchison has plans. Uh-huh. So there's all kinds of ways to build these things. This is just sort of the IKEA way.
Yeah, no, this is great. I love it. So I've just tried to get my mind around it. So
yeah.
So do you actually send these, like the wood, or does the person have to go buy the plywood and cut it out?
Yeah, that's the idea, is that it comes... all the parts, all the plywood parts are already cut out, and those, you get a giant crate full of boat parts.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you deliver a boat parts.
Yeah, and they're all labeled, and it's just like, put A to B, tied together, put C with D, and then yahoo, you got a boat. Yeah, so.
That's crazy. So, and this thing is, I know it's not out yet, but is this how good of a chance is there that this will be out next year?
I'm working on it. The idea is that a friend of mine has built one. So I've built a prototype and now the second one's been built. So everything's ready to go. I'm just trying to figure out a way to make it cheaper.
Yeah. That is the question, right? Because you've got wood, you're going to be buying the wood and and shipping isn't going to be cheap. You're shipping a boat.
That's the thing that kind of makes it like, oh, darn, that takes a big chunk out of it. So I'm kind of thinking maybe just selling the CNC files to people so they can just find a local CNC shop and just have the boat parts cut out near home.
What is CNC?
So that's like a computerized cutter, like a... you know what like a router is? It's like a little cutting tool that spins.
Gotcha.
And so basically you just stick a robot on that router and then you just give these plans to the robot and it just cuts them out for you.
That's perfect.
And so it's cool thing is it's really accurate. You know, you could build a very, you know, perfect hull that way. But it's, you know, it costs some money to, you know, have a robot cut it out for you instead of doing it yourself. So, but the pro is that you get a boat that's really, accurate, basically. Like, you know, if you get it wrong, you're like, oh, my boat just turns to the left all the time.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. It's, if you're not like a boat builder, you know, there's a lot of little things that you got to kind of know.
Gotcha.
So this kind of cuts out the needing to, you know, study.
This is cool. Well,
the cheater's way.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe we'll dig into a little more on the boat building as we go here. And so also on Instagram, Zip Dories, right? You're on Instagram.
Yeah, I think that's my Instagram is Zip Dories.
So. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's coming out. It's around. Like if someone wants a kit, I can get them one. But
oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
I think there might be some interest. I mean, I definitely am interested in it. I think it sounds like a really cool idea. And probably, maybe even if you don't figure out the shipping, if somebody's out, I think you're in the Northwest, somebody could grab a trailer and drive up.
Yeah,
grab
for
it
sure.
From you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they can just come get it. Yeah, that's the cheapest way to do it.
And I've heard all sorts of stories. I know with COVID, people don't mind driving and getting out, right? So there's probably some people that are going to be listening on even maybe the east side of the country. They're like, you know what? I might as well take a trip across the country, go grab some stuff from...
I know. Come enjoy the mountains and hop on a river and get your boat kit.
Exactly. Well, let's dig into, because you've done some dory stuff, and this is my other thing. I've kind of joked about this in the past, but I started watching those dory videos of like the boats flipping, and I love the drift boat, right? But I've never done the Grand Canyon. I've never flipped a drift boat, but I love that whole thing. It's like that idea, and you've got a few videos on YouTube, right, of you going through like lava and some of the big Grand Canyon stuff.
Yeah, I put all my carnage videos on online because they're the most interesting to watch. You know, the boring perfect runs are, you know, boring. So yeah, All the like scary videos are usually what people post on those things. So
that's right.
Yeah, there's some
It's kind of fake. Yeah. It's almost like the Facebook, right? Where it's like, don't think Facebook, you know, people they're posting all their good photos, right? You're only seeing the good you're not seeing the bad side of face, you know, of the people. But so you're saying is that those photos are the giant, because I wonder about that. I've been through some pretty technical stuff, but I always wonder like, well, could I take I know I can't take my normal drift boat down, but if I decked it over like a 16-foot boat, you know, could I be good taking that down? And I know there's a big process there, but is that doable?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, they're even taking down, have you seen the
little guy?
The dory acts, yeah.
Yeah, the little, what are they like 10 footers?
Yeah, I think they might even be under 10.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the smaller the boat, the funner the boat.
So they're not specially designed. They're not, because I know the design. We did a little bit of history of the Rogue style versus the Mackenzie. And like my boat, I think, is actually a Mackenzie. Does it really matter that much if you have a longer flat section on the bottom or what?
For Grand Canyon, it really does make a difference to have that flat section. Because the waves are a little bit bigger. So you kind of want that flat section gives you tracking, basically, and allows you to carry the mass of your boat into a trough of a wave and then back out. It's going to keep directional stability. Whereas the more rocker you have, you think of like an extreme example would be like a teacup or something where you go into the trough of a wave and you just spin around and never make it out of the wave. So that more continuous rocker, I mean, you could definitely take a continuous rocker boat down there, but you're going to get surfed around a little bit. But as long, I mean, it's still fun. I mean, you still will make it through everything. And
That's always my question, because I think about this stuff. Like, first of all, there's the whole question of how would somebody do it if they were going to do their own trip? You know, I know you could pay a dory company to take you down. But the other question is, I mean, have you dumped? Have you been upside down in your drift boat or your dory?
Not yet. It's just a matter of time. But I've been...
Has everybody flipped one down there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody's flipped one down there. And I've definitely been dumped out of my boat, but my boat hasn't gone all the way over.
Wow.
But I've been a passenger in a boat where it went over, and rafts go over. You know, it's just...
It happens.
It's kind of... It just happens. And
how often when the boats go over, so you flip this boat over, how often does that boat just get wrecked and demolished in a rock?
It happens a lot. Yeah. The idea is hopefully you can get your boat over. Like in a dory, you can flip it back over pretty quickly, but you want to get it over before you end up, yeah, crashing into shore or going over a rock upside down or something.
Right.
Usually like like once you're upside down, the bow or the stern of the boat is kind of the deepest part. So you might rack your bow over a rock or something like that, yeah, and crack the gunwale or, yeah. But usually you're just injuring the boat, you're not fully wrecking it. Like, you know, you can bust your boat up pretty good and still have a boat that rows.
Okay,
and you can get you down the river. So yeah.
So essentially, you go down. If you flip, and I flipped once, like a good flip in a raft where it was like boom, I was out of the boat and popped up. And it seems like a lot of times you do pop up near the boat. So that's the hope, is you pop up near, you grab your straps on the side, and then you get. Can one person flip that boat over, or does it take more than one person?
You might be able to. You know, if you do run your 16-footer decked, I would take it out somewhere and see if you can, because you might be able to flip a 16-foot boat back up, right? Our commercial dories, usually it takes at least two people to flip them back over, just because they've got so much gear in them. And it also depends on whether it's been damaged or not. So for sure, very easily, you know, two people can hop up there, flip it back over, but it's maybe full of water, some part of it's flailing, it might not flip over so easily. But with three, like one time, we flipped, I believe, in Horn Creek, and I think it was the bow of the boat kind of got crunched. And so it took three of us to get that boat flipped back over, just because of all the water or something. But yeah, with one person, you might on a 16-foot drift boat be able to just, and we run like, have you heard of flip lines?
No.
So in some of the bigger rapids, we'll run something called a flip line on our boats where they're already basically, I don't know, you've probably seen like a sailboat where a sailboat's capsized and they kind of throw a line over the keel or something, and they lean way back and use that line to kind of flip the boat back over. So that's what we, like, let's say we're running lava or something.
Yeah, while you're floating down in the middle of the river.
Yeah, yeah. We have some people run a rope that goes under the boat from like, basically the oarlock area, and then there's just a rope there, and some people run straps. There's various setups, but they're just already there. So if you go over, you can swim right to your boat, grab that little lifeline that's around the boat, grab the big rope flip line, pull yourself up, and very quickly be pulling that boat over.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. The CRC system from Trussell provides secure and convenient storage for your fully rigged fly rods with unsurpassed gear protection. Every CRC system comes with secure mounting clamps, padding in the reel compartment, and their proprietary suspended rod liners. Leave your gear on your vehicle full time, or quickly take the CRC system down and telescope it into carry mode in just a few minutes with the fastest and easiest to use mounting system on the market. From the very first time I connected with John, I knew this was going to be a great fit for the podcast. Making it easier and faster to get on the water is a huge part for me, especially in the ever crazy and increasingly busy world. Not only are these rods secure for me and the family, but they are always rigged and ready to go. Equipped with their patented protective no-snag reel-up design, this is not your average rod carrier. carrying your rods with reels facing up means more protection for your guides, blink, reel seat, and also allows for a better fit if you have a hatchback. Too much good stuff here for me to cover it all, so I'm going to have to send you over to Trestle and check it out for yourself. You can go there right now. Just take a look at wetflyswing.com/Trestle, and you can get started right now. That's Trestle, T-R-X-S-T-L-E. That's T-R-X-S-T-L-E. You support this podcast by clicking over through that link to check out what John and the Trestle crew have going right now. Okay, back to the show. And I have seen the Flip 9 thing. That's amazing. I mean, I think this picture that I'm trying to get, you know, for somebody that hasn't been down there understanding the Colorado and the Grand Canyon, it sounds like there's some, you know, danger, but really, I mean, people aren't necessarily like dying right every year down there. It's not like there's a bunch of wood and stuff. If you flip, you're just floating, you get to shore. Is that typically not too big of a deal?
Yeah, usually, I mean, typically, on a dory trip at least, you flip your boat, everybody piles up on the upside down boat, flips it back over, and everybody is pulled back in the boat within a minute or two. And the river is fairly deep. So you're staying with the boat. You're not even going to shore. Kind of shore is where some of the injuries can happen.
Oh, right. Because it's rocky. You're actually in a deep canyon. Obviously.
Yeah, you're in a deep channel. Yeah. And so there are some shallow rapids, but most of it's, so it's pretty safe. That's the cool thing about a Grand Canyon trip, actually. I mean, you go online and you see all the carnage videos, but, you know, way over 90% of the river is flat water.
Oh, it is.
And
so how many rapids are in there?
That's a good question. I have no idea. There's a lot of rapids, a lot.
Like big one, like lava. There's only like eight, right, or 10 of those huge.
Yeah. There's only a handful of the big ones that you kind of worry about a little bit. But there's lots of little riffles, and I mean, people have swum the entire canyon,
that's right.
You know, like you don't even need a boat, you know, you just go down on a paco pad, you know?
Wow.
So the cool thing about it is that it's, in the water, the white water and stuff, when you go scout a rapid, it's really big and loud and kind of intimidating looking. But relative to many other rivers, it's actually pretty safe. You know, there's big, deep water. There's giant eddies at the bottom to swim into if you do fall out. And people rarely fall out. It's very rare to flip. It's very rare to fall out of the boat. And the rapids themselves are not very complex. You're usually just setting up in the right place and then just pointing your boat in the direction you want to go. It's not like, you know, some of the, you know, fishing rivers, you're like moving around a rock and pivoting over here and ferrying to the other side of the river. And it's not like that.
That's like Martin Lynn. I remember his story was like, you know what? Martin just pointed it and he just like let the river take him. And it's interesting because I have seen some of those videos, of the dories flipping, and you always see it. You're like, oh, I see how they were just turned enough to the left that they weren't straight enough on the wave. Although I looked at some of your videos and it looks like occasionally you're kind of, it knocks you sideways and you still make it. So, I mean, how close is it within inches? Like if you're off your line, a few turn the wrong way, that's what gets you, or is it something else?
Yeah, it can be. It depends on the rapid. Like, you know, if it's a really big, steep wave, like almost like a hole, if you're just off a degree or two, you're gonna, you know, maybe either go up on your side or flip over. But most of the rapids are very forgiving. And on these commercial dories, you have your passengers. You have four passengers, so two in the front, two in the back. And if they're what they call high siding, so like, you know, if the left edge of the boat is riding up high, if everyone leans to that left side, you can go sideways through lava practically
and be fine.
Yeah, that's what's so cool about the dories. They're real, you know, the passengers are active. They're not just hanging out.
That's huge. So you're not going down there with some inexperienced passengers. Yeah. You got good people in there.
Yeah. Well, they're all inexperienced, but by, you know, we train them the first couple of days and they figure it out pretty quick. We teach them how to high side and you train everybody up in the first few days. So, you can start off knowing nothing and you'll be an expert by the time you get off.
That's amazing. And I want to jump into a little bit of the step-by-step to doing the trip, but Like the Grand Canyon, we all know it's an amazing, you know, national park. But take us, why would somebody want to do that river trip? Why is that so special? Why does it take so long, years, to get a permit there? What is it about for you?
Like, oh, yeah. Gosh, I could talk about that for hours. Number one, I mean, it's so drop-dead gorgeous there. It's so beautiful. It's just like almost, I don't even have words.
Just the lighting and the canyons and everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like each day you're dropping into a different geological layer.
Oh, wow.
So like, you know, one day you're in like this, you know, red supai sandstone. It's all smooth and water fluted and red. Everything's red or something, you know. And then the next day you're in the like Tapete sandstone and it's these beautiful tan colors, and like you just feel like you're in some psychedelic wonderland every day. It's so cool.
Wow. And you have a geologist on board that's telling you all about the history and dinosaurs and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. All the guides. That's the cool thing about a commercial trip is they kind of fill you in on, you know, the geology and stuff.
Would you recommend if somebody's getting into that, would it be, I would love doing this thing on my own, but would it be better just to do this story trip to go with, I'm not sure who the company is, but is that the better way to do it for your first time?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way I did it the first time. I was a passenger on a commercial trip and I was just in awe of the guides and how much they knew and how much they knew the river. You know, it'd be hard for you probably because you'd want to row.
I know. That's my struggle.
But you would just, you might be over, you know, it might be worth it just for all the information and they could teach you how to row all the rapids and all that
to
stuff.
Do everything. That's what I would want. Mm-hmm. I think we got, and again, I'm kind of brainstorming as we go here, but I'm thinking, so tell me about this. This is what I'm really curious about. I've got two kids, two girls, they're amazing. They're totally outdoors and stuff. I mean, is 9 and 7 too young, 10 and 8?
Oh no, they're good. I think that age is amazing.
Really? What if they dump and they're swimming?
Yeah. You know, you'd want to prepare them for that. I think commercial trips.
So kids go down, 7 and 9 year old kids go down there.
They go down. I think 7's the cutoff for commercial trips. But I think if you're doing it your own yourself, you know, you can do whatever you want. But
I don't know. That's the problem with me is that I love rowing and stuff. But I would be like, you know what? Do I want to? I always worry just even on the smaller stuff, taking the kids to the Deschutes. I mean, it was only a couple of years I took them down. I was like, well, you know, do I want to take them through, you know, White Horse and stuff like that? Because, I mean, I imagine just like, okay, it's likely I'm not going to flip. But if I do, are they going to be okay if they're swimming on their own? And I worry about that.
Right. I would say it's a good thing to worry about. Yeah. You know, you'd get them the biggest, giantest, or, you know, most flotation life jacket that they make.
Exactly.
And we'd teach them, you know, like if you really want them to go do this thing, they absolutely can do it. It just takes a little, you know, extra care and just making sure they're comfortable. It's a long trip.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
You know, it's 14 to 18 days. Yeah. Uh-huh. But kids usually love it.
So you can't do it any less than 14?
You could. If you were on a private trip, you could push it a little bit, but I don't think you'd really want to.
No,
it wouldn't be fun. You'd be stressed
and
exactly that. Yeah, me too. Yeah. Yeah, I would go. If you actually get the chance to go, you want to maximize every hour you're there for sure.
That's cool.
But yeah, you could take kids that age for sure. And make sure they've been on a multi-day trip before and kind of know the routine and all that kind of stuff. But seven's a go in my book.
I would love to, they're on their way. I just bought some new oars that are lighter so they could row the drift boat. And I'm hoping that, you know what I mean, we're not too many years off where they're going to be rowing down and doing all that stuff.
Oh, that would be so incredible. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You could, and you know, and you don't necessarily have to do it in a dory. Like if you got the chance to go tomorrow, I would go in whatever boat you could find.
You could take a raft.
Like, yeah. And the dory trips we do, we always take rafts too.
For gear boats?
For gear. Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. Is the dory, if you pick between the dory and a big raft, whatever, your 16, 18 foot raft, is it safer? Are you less likely to flip in a raft or is it just equal?
Yeah, it is. I did a trip with my brother a few years back. And so we were just a solo boat trip. And so I took an 18 foot raft because I knew it was going to be basically impossible to flip that thing. And being one boat, you know, it's just safer to take a raft.
Safer.
Yeah, it's safer. Okay. It's just going to flip less easily, especially weighted with all that gear. You put all the gear as low as you can in the boat. And I mean, it's almost impossible to flip those things. It depends on the water level, but yeah.
Gotcha. So you don't have a big pile of like gear behind you above your head.
Yeah. Yeah. You do if, you know, you're running the commercial trips and you got, you know, 16 passengers with two duffel bags each, you know, you got these giant piles. I'm sure you've seen the pictures of those, you know, commercial rafts.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're just doing a private trip, you don't have that much gear at all. And
no,
so
okay.
Just keep it all low. And yeah, I mean, for sure. And some people too, because the dories really are, they're kind of like a sports car. So, or like a surfboard, you know, it's a much more exciting ride. And some people don't love that. You know, some people are like, oh, I'd rather just hang out and look at birds and, you know, lay on the raft and just, you know, look at the rocks and not worry about having to lean and, you know, pay attention.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
That's
right. Everybody likes.
That's cool.
A different, yeah.
Are people down there? Well, I got two questions here. So if we were setting up a trip, you know, you could go with, the first one would be, you know, who you could go with, then on the second thing, do it on your own. So if you were going with a company, are there, you know, who would you recommend? Is there a bunch of companies or is it just a few like key ones, whether it's raft or dories?
Yeah, there's a bunch of companies. I can just speak for the companies that I've worked with. So I've done some trips with a company called, it's colloquially called CanX, but it's Canyon Expeditions and Explorations. And they're incredible. I think those were some of my favorite trips. It's really the guides. And they just had really incredible guides that really cared, that, you know, they really care about what kind of experience you're having down there. And they also have different kinds of trips.
Yeah. Is this raft and stories?
Yeah. So there, well, CanX is, I think, just rafts. I don't think they have any dories. The company that's got the most dories is Oars. And my uncle just went down on a commercial trip with Oars, and he just can't stop talking about it. It's just like, he just thought it was the greatest thing on earth.
I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah. So they are great too. I've never worked on an Oars trip, but I've heard great things. Azra has a couple dories, and I think, I don't know, Brad Dimmick used to do a couple trips with Azra. Some dory trips. I think they called it Dories and Stories. And so they had all the cool, like original, you know, Martin Boatman, and they would go down and tell you stories and, you know, take you down a dory. So I don't know if they're still doing that trip, but that would be a good one to get on too. But most of those companies are pretty good, but I would definitely say like CanX, Oars, and Azra have the best.
Okay. So there's that. So you got that. We can definitely go there. If you want to do it on your own, and there's a whole bunch of logistics to get to the river and stuff, but take us to once, like say you get all that and you're doing your, you know, I'm taking my, somehow I got to drift a dory. It's all set up. We're doing this trip with a group. What's that look like when you take us to like the night before and then give us a little, like a quick rundown on the trip. Where are you writing? Yeah. Where are you putting in?
Yeah. So you're putting in a place, the actual boat ramp is called Lee's Ferry. And so everybody gets there somehow.
And you camp there the night before?
Yep. You got to get there the night before. And that's, I think it's a sort of a policy. So you have to be there the night before. And the rangers there kind of do a pre-check of all the people and all that kind of stuff. And then you camp, or you could stay up at Marble Canyon Lodge, which is just up the road a little ways, or Vermilion Cliffs. And then the next day you come down and meet with the ranger, and they give you the thumbs up and you go down the river. And you shuttle your vehicles to either, there's some logistics there. It sort of depends on what you guys are doing, but there's usually a shuttle of some sort involved. On a private trip, the more prep you do, the better. And I would say for a private trip, the most important thing is to edit your participant list.
Have the best.
Just have the people you could go through, you know, thick and thin.
Yeah. that can handle.
Yeah. And that are fun too, you know, and just that's the only bad stories I've heard are times when they, you know, maybe were worried they didn't have enough experience or something and hired some, you know, guide to come and they were just like a military person and took over the trip.
Nightmare.
And, yeah. So oh my gosh. It's all about the people you're with. So yeah.
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 Okay. So once you get going, once you put in, and let's say you said 14 to 18 days,
yeah.
Let's just say you're doing the 18 day trip. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? Are you floating? How many miles is the total trip?
So it depends on where you take out, but it's about, I think to Pierce Ferry, if I'm correct, it's around 270 miles.
Oh, wow.
But you could take out earlier at Diamond Creek. I forget what the mileage is at Diamond Creek, but less. And so, yeah, it's a big chunk of miles. But if you were doing an 18-day trip, that leaves you enough time, in theory, to have a couple layover days where... You know what that is. Yeah, you just stay where you're at. Yeah, and so that's pretty nice. Yeah, yeah, that's and on a especially even on a commercial trip, but a private trip, it's so nice to do that. And you know, everybody can go off on their own adventure and stuff, and that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
On a 14 day, you can pull that off too. You just have to be a little bit more disciplined about getting off the beach in the morning at a certain time and getting your miles in.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Dedi Flies, established in 1928, is the oldest family-run fly shop in the world. And you know I'm all about the history and fly fishing, which is one reason I'm super stoked to have Dedi on as a sponsor this year. Long before I made my first order with Dedi, I remember hearing stories about the quality and the history and always wanting to connect deeper with them. So that time has come now, and I share the Dedi tradition with you. Located in Livingston Manor on the banks of Willowemoc Creek, Dedi is your welcoming place on the creek or online. Their retail and online shop have a large selection of flies, materials, fly gear, outdoor lifestyle items, books, and more. Dedi Flies inventory consists solely of products that meet every angler's demand for highest quality and service. Of course, they offer fly fishing and casting lessons as well as guided trips. For more information, visit Dedi Flies at wetflyswing.com/Dedi or give them a call, 845-439-1166. That's wetflyswing.com/Dedi, D-E-T-T-E. You support this podcast by clicking over through that link to Dedi. Okay, let's get back to the show. So when you put in at Lee's Ferry, you put in there, how many miles, how many days do you go before you hit your first big one that you've been thinking about the whole trip?
Yeah. Oh, quite a way. Well, I guess it depends on whether you're rowing a dory or not.
Yeah, let's say a dory.
So if you're rowing a dory, your first rapid that you might worry about or know to worry about, not that you really need to worry about it, but is a house rock rapid.
Okay.
And so that you could hit that on your first day if you guys were really – actually, no. It depends. On a private trip, probably not.
We're talking 20 miles a day, right? Roughly?
I would say less than that. It depends on the day. So some days where you're in a lot of current, like let's say you're running the Roaring 20s rapids, you're going to make quite a few miles that day. But if you're on a big flat water section, you might only make 11 miles or something like that.
Okay.
So it depends on the day. But yeah, maybe it averages out to something like that. I'm not sure. I've never actually done the math, but... yeah, you need to make some miles a day. And you got to just, like, if it's windy, you might make 4 miles or zero. Or, you know, it's just kind of depends. But you got some leeway in an 18-day trip at least. But house rock. So here's the one factor on a private trip that you don't always know is that at Lee's Ferry, you have to get checked out by the rangers. And all the rangers, they're all a little bit different about how they go about it. And one of the private trips that I was on, the ranger just kept talking and would not release the trips. And it was I was just going crazy because it's actually a safety factor. Like he didn't release the trips until about noon.
Oh, wow.
So that does not leave you very much time to get down the river to a camp.
No.
So I actually wrote into the park system and just said, hey, you know, we gotta do something about this then. And I think they're better at it. Maybe he was a new ranger.
It would make sense to me to do it the night before, check everybody in the day before. That way people can leave first thing in the morning.
Yeah. That would be absolutely the best thing. I agree. Yeah. So, because if you do want to run that house rock rapid on a private trip, sometimes it's pretty hard because you might leave pretty late in the day and it's not of your own volition, but the kind of the red tape that you got to go through. So, but you'd run that either that first day or the early the second day. And it's a little bit of a pucker factor because it's the first one. It's not that scary. It's not that hard, but there's some factors in it. And it's the first one. You're like, oh my gosh. And you can walk right down the entire rapid all the way. And so you can look at these waves in their actual dimensions and you're just like, oh my goodness gracious. They're big. So you could scare yourself, but it's really not that bad, but it's the first rapid that you actually have to make a move in. And yeah. With right. the dories, the run's slightly different than the raft run. And so, yeah, that's the first one. And
are most of these rapids where you have to make a couple of big moves or you could mm-hmm. be in trouble, or is it more than just a couple?
It's usually like one move.
One.
Yeah. They're really straightforward. And with the dories, it always involves, you know, putting your boat in a position to avoid shallow underwater rocks usually. Oh, so you might have to hang out in the current a little bit more. Like for instance, on House Rock, the first time I rode it in a baggage boat, I had this gigantic baggage boat that was just completely unmanageable. And they were just like, go row that boat into the rocks on the right, you know, just bang down the rocks, just go wow. over all of these little pour overs and just that's the run, you know. And but obviously you're not going to do that in the dory, whereas the dory, you're going to hang out in the main channel a little bit longer and make your move to the right and hopefully not run it into the shallows. So, but yeah, it's like that's one move. Yeah.
And which one, and we're going to start to wrap this up pretty quick here, but I'm curious as far as like, what is the, is lava the biggest or what is the biggest couple rapid or couple?
So for dories, lava's huge. Lava's kind of scares people because it's a little bit of a roll of the dice. You know, it doesn't matter if you're the best boatman in the canyon, it might just flip your boat. So,
yeah. And why is that?
It's just, there's a wave about halfway down or so called the V wave. And, you just basically, as your boat goes into that wave, it's either going to let you through or it's not. And it has nothing really to do with, you know, I mean, you got to kind of get the right boat angle to have a chance, but, just sometimes it flips boats and sometimes it doesn't. And
no
I don't
kidding.
Know. Yeah. It's so it's
even if you've got the most skilled passengers on the boat.
Oh, totally. You got, yeah. I mean, that makes a huge difference. If you have people that know how to high side on your boat, that's what's going to keep you upright in lava is your passengers. You got to be in the right spot and you got to get your boat angle right, but your passengers keep you upright in the dory. So that one, and it's cool because it's kind of at the end. So it's this big, you know, build up to lava falls,
right.
You know. So that one's pretty special. But there's definitely rapids that scare the dory boatman more than lava just because there's either rocks or there's just things that can go wrong. I mean, Horn Creek's kind of scary. Crystal Rapids a little bit.
Oh yeah.
You got to get that one just right. And Hance, that one's always freaks me out a little bit. Hance is a little bit of a challenge sometimes.
Yep.
So yeah, there's a bunch of them that are pretty fun. And I get nervous in Hance, and then there's just rapids that are just so fun at all levels. Like all the photos are probably of Hermit Rapid, where it's just like a big, fun wave train. And yeah.
Is there a best time if somebody's setting up a trip, when would be a good time to go?
My favorite times are April and September. April, you get all the spring wildflowers. The whole desert is in bloom and it's just drop dead gorgeous.
Wow.
But you're going to get a little bit of wind and it's going to be a little cooler.
Are you wearing dry suits and stuff like that in April?
April, no. You're just wearing, it's still going to be mostly warm, but you're going to have a few cold, rainy days probably where you're just in, we just wear like maybe a few, an extra layer and like our rain gear or something if you're running the rapids, but we don't usually run dry suits in April.
Yeah.
But you could, yeah, I mean, bring it for sure. And then September is just beautiful because it's just ideal temperatures. Usually it's still quite warm, but it's past the monsoon season, so it's less rainy. You have a chance. Sometimes in September, the dam changes how they regulate the dam. So it has a steady release. So you're sometimes riding on 8,000 CFS continuously, which the great thing about that is that so at night when you park your boat, there's a fluctuation in the river level. So you're always having to adjust your boat so you don't end up high and dry on the beach. So when you're running on continuous current, it's great. You just fall asleep and wake up the next morning and you're good to go. But so that's pretty nice when you can hop on that. So
okay. So basically, so April or September, and September is going to also be, is it going to be a little bit hotter or about similar?
Yeah. It's pretty hot in September usually. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you want the hot, if you're into the hot weather, then September is maybe the better time to go. And then, there's lots of planning. You mentioned a couple of companies that can get you going, and it's pretty much, if you do it on your own, obviously there's a lot more work to do, but are there any, if somebody was going to do it on their own, where would you recommend they start from digging into getting prepared for it?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the first thing to do is get yourself in the Grand Canyon lottery so that you can win a ticket down there, win the golden ticket.
How long does that take? Yeah. Tell us that. What's the secret? How do you get a goal? How do you not wait 15 years?
So the only way that I know, it really is a lottery. The first time my dad applied, he won. So that was just, you know, so.
What is it, like $100 to apply for the lottery?
I think it's not that much. I think it's, I don't know what it is. It's under probably $100, but then as soon as you win, you have to have your money ready.
And your money.
So you have to pay for a portion of it right away to kind of lock in that date.
Pay the National Park Service.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think it's called the Grand Canyon River Lottery. So just, you know, search that and make sure you're all signed up for it. Because sometimes it takes a while through those kind of government websites to get everything all set. But that lottery runs, I believe, I think it's in February, but it might be January. So double check that. But so once that starts, you got to put your name in the hat with the dates that you want, and then just be ready if you get your ticket drawn. So that's the first step, is just get signed up for the lottery. And then the second step would be maybe think about, obviously, start getting your passenger list or all the people that you want, that you think you want, and get them ready in case you win. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, that it's a possibility. And then secondly, also think about the private trips that I do now, I actually use a company called Seiba, Seiba, and they're like an outfitting company, and so they just do everything for you. So you just show up at the put-in, and they bring the boats, the food, the gear, everything.
Oh, wow. So you can do a private trip. You can do your own private trip. They'll give you all the gear.
Yeah.
Even if it's, will they give you a dory?
No, they won't give you dory. No. Unfortunately, maybe someday.
But you could bring your own dory.
You could bring, for sure. You could bring your own boats. You can bring anything you want. They'll just bring whatever else you need. And
that's cool. That's it. That's the resource we were looking for. So that one will Seiba. Get you dialed in. If you want to do your own, get your trip, call Seiba.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of other companies that do it. I've just had the best luck with them. They've just done a better job than other companies just for our trips, but there's other companies that do a great job too.
Okay,
so, there's not a huge cost difference. By the time, you know, you add it all up, it's about, you know, it's a little bit more to have a company like that do it, but not by much.
What is that? So is this roughly like if you were to do a Grand Canyon trip, whether you pay a company, what are we looking at just roughly price-wise?
So I have not done a private trip in about 4 years. So these numbers are old. So when we did it ourselves, where we shopped for all the food and gathered the gear and all that stuff, I think it worked out to about $700 per person.
Oh, wow.
And so if you're hiring a company, like, yeah, it's, oh, yeah. But we're bringing our own boats. We're bringing our own river gear, all the stoves and all the units and all that. It's mostly food and beer.
But, yeah, exactly.
But, yeah.
So you can't take beer. So there's room for beer.
Oh, yeah. There's always more room for the beer. Yeah.
It's not just, yeah, like the trips where you're like, okay, you can only take a little hard alcohol because you're running low on room.
It is shocking the amount of like cases of beer piled up at Lee's Ferry.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. People bring the most hilarious things down the trip. We bring like bags of costumes and, you know, just totally unnecessary things.
That's cool. So there, I always think of this thing, like, what's your, you know, when you're hiking, you can bring one, you know, your one luxury item, but this is not that. You got plenty of room.
You're bringing the kitchen sink for sure on these trips. Yeah. Yeah. I would say, you know, bring it, you know. It's crazy what you can pack into these dories and 18-foot rafts for sure. If you're bringing your little 16-footer, you're not going to want to pack it that full, but you'll have a baggage boat. So, so these, let's see. So, costs. I think Sabo was like $1,000 a person maybe.
Oh, wow.
So, but that's like all the gear. I mean, it may be different now because of quite a few years. Things have changed. Yeah, it could be. But like a commercial dory trip, you're going to pay, you know, I mean, with your having the guides and everything. But I mean, it's going to be at least $4,000 probably per person to go on a commercial dory trip.
Yeah. So if you got a family, it's going to cost you $15,000 or something like that.
Yeah. At least. Yeah. I mean, I would say it's worth it. I mean, it was the best money I'd never spent that much money on a trip. I think our trip, I mean, it was a long time ago, but I think it was about $2,000 when I went. And I just thought, oh my gosh, like I've never spent this much money on, you know, luxury ever in my life. And it was the best money I'd ever spent. It changed my life. So
that sounds, I mean, 4,000 is like, that's your, really, when you think of, well, I always think fly fishing. Obviously, a lot of people here are fly fishermen and women. And, you know, you go to these trips out there, these lodges or whatever. I mean, $4,000 is a good price, you know.
Some of those are really? $10,000
or more. Yeah, I mean, it's spendy. Oof, yeah. Well, if you do the lodges, I'm more on the DIY. I like the DIY stuff, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if you do DIY on the canyon, yeah, it's probably going to be in the, I would think, about $1,000 range per person.
Okay, cool.
So, and that's probably including the park fees and all that kind of stuff.
Let's, we've left a lot on the table here, but maybe we could save this, get you on again down the line to dig more into the trip. I'm just curious as we kind of wrap this up, you've heard a lot of stories. You want to leave us with one story? Maybe it's your own, or maybe it's one you hear of, you know, I don't know if it's Linton or one of those. Is there a good one that... Yeah.
Well, since we're talking about private trips, I'll give you a private trip story. So I was on a private trip with a bunch of guides. And so when you go down the canyon, you're kind of always, you're going to launch with maybe two or three other trips. So you're going to always kind of see the same group here and there.
Gotcha.
You kind of overlap. One day you'll pass them, one day they'll pass you, and you just kind of see them. And so there was another group that launched with us, and it was a DIY trip from Montana. And it was a bunch of guys that had gone to college together, and they were now like in their 50s. And it was like, and they were like the nicest, coolest people. And they all each had their own boat. And, you know, and it was just a smorgasbord of gear and boats. And like every day we saw them, and like, something had happened, you know, like they'd have like a bandage around their head or something, and, you know, and they're like, oh yeah, we lost Frank in that last rabbit. He, you know, hit his head. Oh, he's fine though. He's fine. And they, every day there was just absolute carnage, but they were having the best time of their lives. Wow. They actually lost a boat.
Oh, wow.
They ran out of oars. We had to loan them an oar because lost so many oars, and you take two spares. So, I mean, it was just, when we saw them, they were like bandaged up. They had arms in slings, and they were in heaven. They were so happy. Yeah. So there
That's
you go.
Perfect.
Like, yeah. I mean, you can't, if you get the chance to go, you just go. Like,
there you go.
Ideally in a dory, but man, if it's got to be on a Paco pad, go on a Paco pad.
Go on a Paco pad, go on whatever you have. This is cool. Nice. All right. Well, yeah. Anything you mentioned the Zip Dory, anything you want to give a heads up on the next kind of year you have coming that this podcast is going to be out there for a while. So anything new coming up for you?
I'm just kind of working on that boat kit, and you know, it's not really a product yet, but if people are interested, I'm happy to try to figure out a way to get them a kit and, or get them some CNC files so that they can build their own boat. But I'd say, yeah, just build boats and go down the river. And yeah, I mean, and I'm not, you know, obviously the only boat builder. Brad Dimmick's building them and Andy's building them. And yeah, so there's lots of options there. But yeah, for your boat, I would say, man, deck that boat over, and I'm happy to help you. And
yeah. Exactly. Maybe we can talk more about that. I this old thing, I would love to have you, if you had time, to just look at it and be like, is this thing even worth putting decking over? Because like, again, and I probably want to maybe surround it in fiberglass as well, right?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the shape of the wood, what kind of it's in. But yeah, we could kind of play with the costs and see. Sometimes it's just faster and easier to just build a new one. But
build a new boat. Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
But it depends on what shape the boat's in and stuff. But yeah, you send me some photos and we can kind of brainstorm it. Yeah.
I'll do that. Yeah, I'll send you some pics and you can take a look. And we'll go from there. And Kelly, we'll definitely... I would love to talk more about the boat building. You know, we kind of touched on the surface of that and some of the stuff, but I'll put some videos in the show notes and things like that. Anything else before we get out of here you want to leave off? Any words of advice on the canyon?
No, just thanks for having me, and fun talking to you, and fun to get psyched on the river during the wintertime here as we chat. So yeah, just thanks for having me.
All right, Kelly, we'll check in with you soon and let you know when this thing goes live.
Okay, sounds good. All right, thanks, Dave.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all links, everything else we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/278. That is 278. Please subscribe if you get a chance to this show. You can do that very easily by going to wetflyswing.com/subscribe. And before we head out of here, I wanted to give you a heads up. We have a superstar, super cool dude, super cool episode this Tuesday. Tim Flagler, the guy behind the massive YouTube fly tying channel video production. We get in a bunch of great stuff in this one, including his background and how he put together such amazing, high quality videos. Click subscribe right now in whatever app you're using. If it's Apple Podcasts, the upper right corner, that little plus sign, follow, and you'll get updated when this big episode goes live. Plus, Tim shares some of his top flies and top videos, gives us a little list there that you're going to love. Some flies and tips, mostly the tips that I think you're going to love. So check it out. That's all I have for you today. Hope you enjoyed the show. Looking forward to catching up with you soon. Maybe see you online, maybe on the river.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.